She's well-traveled, restaurant concept creator and a marketer and an innovator and a businesswoman, Turaya Talib. Welcome, Turaya, to the show.
While I was living in China, no prospect income, no prospect project. If I ate noodles tonight, I will not be able to make it to the office tomorrow because I was running my own business.
What do you feel is the biggest misconception people have about China?
That they eat cockroaches. If I tell my dad that, he'll be like, pack your bags and come back. The beggar on the street, if you tell him Meo Qian means no cash, they will take out a QR code for Alipay and WeChat Pay. There, every country has its own weird food habits. That doesn't mean this is good or this is bad.
Welcome to License to Explore. This is your host, Rohit. This is the show where we uncover the world's most amazing people.
This is your podcast, but I dominate it because I'm here.
Dubai is very safe.
No.
City of safety.
I was crying my eyes out in the toilet.
If I ate noodles tonight, I will not be able to make it to the office tomorrow.
How would you define yourself as a traveler?
Great question.
Every travel you do, you get to be a different person.
Welcome to License to Explore with your host, Rohit. This is a show where we uncover travel stories and travel journeys of our amazing guests. And today we have the amazing guest with us, and she's well-traveled, and she's a Lebanese girl, was born in Saudi Arabia. And she took this bold step of booking a one-way ticket to China and just landing up there. And we're going to ask her about her journey in China. She's also lived in different countries. She's lived in Jordan. She's lived in Saudi Arabia, and she's lived in Lebanon, and now in Dubai. And Turaya Talib, who is basically a restaurant concept creator and a marketer and an innovator and a businesswoman. Welcome, Turaya, to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me with you.
How do you feel today, Turaya?
Oh, very good. Alhamdulillah.
Great. How was your day?
Pretty productive and busy. Actually, I had to go to Sharjah today and come back.
Right. So Turaya actually made China go crazy, and she taught China about dabke and belly dancing and actually introduced China to some great food, and she took this bold
move. Scream Yalla Habibi.
Yes, Yalla Habibi. That company used to be called Yalla Habibi, and she actually made sure that everyone in China followed what Yalla Habibi is all about. So today we are going to uncover your journey, open your travel files. But before we do that, Turaya, I just want to ask you really that where this did this love for travel actually start? Where did your travel bug, where did it bite you? When did it bite you?
I think ever since I was a kid, because I was born and raised in Saudi, as you know, and every year we go back to Lebanon. And for us, we wait all 9 months to go to Lebanon for 3 months. You know, like every year, we're just waiting for the summer to travel and have, an experience in Lebanon, because we're in the village. It's not like living in a city. We play around with the dogs and the cats and the butterflies. And like we watch the old ladies milking cows, you know, and we have those very unique experiences. And ever since then, I feel like I always wanted to travel more and I wanted to experience more. And I think here I am.
How old were you at that time when you actually really started traveling?
Traveling or living in different countries? That's the question.
Maybe you can answer both, traveling as well as living.
Well, traveling back and forth to Lebanon is with the family since I was born, technically, so it doesn't count that much. But let's say traveling in my 20s, let's say. Wow. In my 20s, yeah. I mean, great. As an adult, it's easier to move around.
All right, Turaya, you're not just a traveler. You're somebody who immerses the cultures. And you're the kind of person who's not like trying to do touristy things or... Mm-mm. And it's so amazing that you have lived in so many different countries. You've lived in Saudi, you've lived in Jordan, you've lived in Lebanon, China, and Dubai. And you actually, initiated the Yalla Habibi movement in China. So do you see your travel as a way to connect with yourself? And how do you look at travel? And what kind of experience beyond just exploring new places has travel given you?
To be honest, definitely it made me not just connect with myself more, understand myself more. Especially when I left to China, I thought I was strong and everything. And then I found out, like, after China, I was like, oh, no, I'm totally different. I'm way stronger than ever. I am more resilient. I'm adaptive. I could learn languages. I learned Chinese. I learned their culture. I learned about their food. I learned about the heritage. But the same thing applied even when I went to Jordan. Even though in Jordan they speak Arabic, but it's a total different dialect and a little bit different culture than Lebanese and Saudi, which I was used to. It's a little bit in between, yes. But also, even though I was living in Jordan, I was traveling within Jordan a lot. I was going around, whether it's for hiking, whether it's for exploring, or going to Wadi Rum, or Petra, or to the mountains, or even sometimes on a Friday, just driving to nowhere. No destination, just taking my car, my coffee, and sometimes getting to places where I literally had no signal on my phone, no radio, no map, no roads anymore. Yeah. I don't know where I was, but at some point when I was posting on my socials, even my Jordanian friends who were living all their life in Amman, they're like, where the hell are you? Like, we've never been to those places. So I'm this kind of person. I like to walk around. I like to explore. If it's not with my car, I just walk.
So you're a true explorer. In fact, you know, sometimes when I'm out in Dubai, I feel a bit strange because I live here for almost now 23 years.
Wow.
And when I came to Dubai, obviously there was no GPS. So we were used to finding our own way.
Yeah,
right, exactly. Now, GPS has changed the life. And like, especially a lot of new taxi drivers, when they take me around and they're looking at GPS, it irritates me sometimes because I know the way, like, I know you have to go like this, like that.
You know the shortcut.
Yeah. Cool. So, Turaya, we want to dig really deep in your China story. But before we do that, I just want to establish to our audience that what is your travel persona? Are you the person who likes to travel on a budget, or you like to travel on luxury trips, or it's a mix of both? Or what kind of a traveler, how would you define yourself as a traveler?
I would say I'm a cultural / food traveler. Okay. Not someone who travel on a budget. I've never stayed in a hostel, let's say.
Yeah. But bed and breakfast.
I definitely bed and breakfast, definitely guest houses, definitely Airbnb, definitely boutique hotels. But luxury hotels, not a necessity. If I can afford it, then why not? But it's not a necessity for me. But I do prefer a boutique hotel. I do prefer a local experience. Not necessarily on very low budget, because I really want to be comfortable as well. I want to be in my own space, not to be sharing with other people, or, you know, for the safety. I'm an Arab woman at the end of the day. And I'm a grown up, you know. I'm not like a teenager or like early 20s or anything. I'm almost 40 now. So
yeah,
I need my comfort and my convenience. And yeah, I would rather enjoy a local experience rather than go to somewhere that is too touristy. And something that is too common and everyone knows about. You know, I'd rather have like very, very hidden gems kind of experience, walking around, exploring places people don't go to usually.
Awesome. That's great. Turaya, so on this show, we have this ritual of doing one thing where we ask every guest, and I mean everyone who comes to the show, that no question asked, today if I actually handed you out a first class ticket, where would you go and why?
Can I exchange that for 5 economy tickets?
You could. I mean, that's
and
a good idea.
And go to 5 destinations?
Yeah. Why not? So you're not the person who believes in traveling and luxury.
No, it's like, definitely if it's a long distance trip, like, for example, New Zealand, I definitely would love to go to New Zealand and Australia and explore that part of the world. Since it's a very, very, very long journey, I don't mind going on a first class, or Fiji, for example. But do I prefer first class over going to multiple destinations? I'd rather go to multiple destinations, definitely.
Great. So the last guest on our show, she chose Colombia. And I've been to Colombia, I've been to Bogota.
I would definitely go to Latin America, for sure.
Yeah, because that's too far, you know? It makes sense to use a
first class ticket to Mexico. But if I get there, I might not come back.
That's possible.
I might not come back.
The place might mesmerize you and it might, you know, you might start belonging there.
I think I'm a Latina in my previous life. I think I was a Latina. So I don't know.
Awesome. And we also spoke about one interesting thing that she shared with me, that Star Alliance, because you mentioned 5 countries or 5 tickets, 5 economy class tickets rather than one first class ticket, she mentioned that Star Alliance actually has an around the world ticket.
I have heard of that.
Yeah, and she actually used that ticket many years ago, maybe 10 years ago. She bought that ticket for $1,500 10 years ago.
Wow.
Today it costs around, today they still offer that ticket and it costs around $5,500. but you get to choose 15 places around the world and you get to cover a certain amount of miles. Like it has a mileage limit that you can travel so many miles. I was researching about it and it's kind of very interesting and
that's very, very inspiring. Yes, very interesting. Definitely.
I think you like this idea.
Yes, of course.
All right, so let's now try to dig deeper into your travel dossier and your travel profile and where you've been to, what you've done. But before we actually dig really into China topic, because that's really at the back of my mind and I want to really pick your mind on it, I want to understand your global nomad life, which I think you're like a global nomad because you lived in across Saudi Arabia, Jordan, China, Lebanon, and now Dubai. So can you tell me about each of these places, like maybe one or two things that actually, you know, you took away or that stayed with you from these experiences of living in these places, not just traveling?
Saudi coffee, for sure. Wow. I literally had Saudi coffee just now before coming. So as a Lebanese family growing up in Saudi, there are some of the habits and the cultural elements that we adopted, which is Saudi coffee in Ramadan. Literally every day in Ramadan growing up, we had Saudi coffee at home. So now I make it here in Dubai.
Wow.
And I made all my friends try it and get addicted to it. So every day in Ramadan, I have to have Saudi coffee. Otherwise, I don't feel like it's Ramadan for me. And of course, paired with dates and all of these things. And definitely, I do love Saudi music and culture. I didn't get to get too much into Saudi culture as much as I would have loved to, because back in the days when I was growing up there, it was a little bit different than today. I grew up in international schools. I grew up in a Lebanese, Levant, you know, expat bubble kind of thing.
Middle Eastern.
So there were some limitations, but it was not in my hand.
Okay.
But definitely within Saudi, we did travel, not too much, but my dad has always made the effort to, you know, show us around. We would go to Taif when we can. We'd go to Riyadh when we can. Of course, Riyadh back in the days, it was totally different than today. I'm still getting cultural shock every time I go there and see things differently. I'm like, ooh, I can there, drive now.
I was there last year and it's kind of, yeah, it's it really evolved.
It's,
Riyadh,
it's
yeah.
The changes better, are interesting, of course, yeah. Even in Jeddah, the changes are very interesting. But definitely, I do love and miss the food in Jeddah. Especially the street food, like the Hijazi cuisine, the Balila and the Tamis. Whenever I get back to Jeddah, like I put a list for my family, like I want to eat all of this stuff. And it's all cheap food, like literally street food. Nothing fancy, nothing sophisticated, like, you know, the corner store on the street beneath our apartment or something. I love this kind of stuff. And I do miss it here in Dubai, to be honest with you. In Jordan, I wouldn't say that I left Jordan to China, definitely, but we still have a house in Jordan. My sister now is married there. I still go back and forth. So even Jeddah, I still go back and forth to Jeddah because my family is still there. But Jordan, definitely, I fell in love with it. I lived 6 years in Jordan.
Okay.
I have amazing friends from there. They're very genuine people. They look like they are always grumpy, but they're very nice people. At the same time, they have amazing, Amman has like this amazing charm. You know, it looks like cozy, it feels cozy. I went there in October and I was like, oh, I miss this. You know, it's like, it's a mix in between, it's a city, but at the same time, still cozy. It has the culture, it has this community. It's beautiful on its own way. But unfortunately, it's not like, for me, I felt like I needed to grow in a different direction. This is why I moved to China. And China, of course, is a whole different story. It's the best experience of my life, to be honest with you. These are the places that I actually lived in. But I did travel to different places, and of course, I loved them. Like, I went to South Africa, I went to Turkey, I went to Europe. And obviously, within China, I traveled a lot as well. Like, China is a whole, it's like a continent on its own. So yeah. The north is different than the south. East and the south and the island and whatever. They all speak Mandarin, obviously, but different dialects. So even that was hard for me. It's like as if you're learning Arabic Fusha and then going to Lebanon. No one understands you. And you don't understand anyone speaking Lebanese.
Or going to Egypt.
Yeah, exactly. But at the same time, I did learn so much about the people and about myself throughout this.
Great.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So for me, I've been to Saudi Arabia. I've been to Dammam, Khobar, Jeddah. And of course, Riyadh. yes, I really enjoy when I go to Saudi Arabia. I really enjoy the mandi and the, ooh. You know, I think the mandi here, wherever you go, you don't get that taste. You also have the camel mandi there, which is quite popular, which I've tried, and it's been a great experience. Jordan, unfortunately, I never had the opportunity to visit, but inshallah, maybe next month I might go. But
I'll
let's
send
see
you
how
an itinerary.
My, I will hire you as my planner.
Travel consultant.
Right. China, I was there briefly in Shenzhen mostly. This was in 2013.
It's a very industrial city.
It's a very industrial city. Mm. We were there for a conference, business conference. That was in 2013. And yeah, Beirut, I've been to Lebanon. I love Lebanon.
The
been
best
to
country
Beirut,
ever.
Beirut, Batroun, Juni.
Nice.
I had a good time when I was traveling to... I was going there actually to meet consultants on a business like Dar al-Andasa.
Mm.
Because in the industry I come from, these consultants are the ones who actually specify...
They're the best.
...projects, yeah. So we went for meeting these consultants, but we did enjoy the food, the people, the culture, and everybody was so friendly and welcoming. It's truly amazing. All right, so let's actually talk about your big move.
To China.
You took a one-way ticket and you left everything and you went to China. What was going on in your mind? What just happened?
I literally heard a voice in my head.
Really?
Yes.
And you mean it? You heard a voice in
no,
your
no,
head?
No, literally. A voice clearly telling me, Thraya, go to China. Something big is waiting for you there.
Wow. I've never had this. It's unreal.
It's
kind of unbelievable. And you took that big leap and...
It took me a while, of course, to be able to have to build the courage and have an excuse to go there. At the end of the day, again, I come from an Arab family.
Yeah.
I'm a woman. I was living in Jordan at the time. I had a full-time job. We own a house in Amman. I had a dog. I had a car. I had everything when that voice happened.
Wow.
And I realized... I Googled when I had some time, and I'm like, if I want to live in China, I need to speak Mandarin. So I signed up immediately for Mandarin classes, and I started exactly that week. And I did, the funny thing is that I did have like a file of all documents, sometimes notes that you write, you keep them for a while. And for some reason, I opened them that week, and I saw a to-do list that I had written when I was 25. And it had things that I wanted to do before I'm 30. And that month was like 2 months before I turned 30. And one of the bullet points was learn Chinese.
Wow. That's insane, guys.
And I started learning Chinese. So I tried to get a job or a scholarship or anything. And when a job worked, the visa didn't work. And when I got very high grades to secure a scholarship, the grades came out after the scholarship deadline application was over to get to go learn Chinese. And at that time, I really wanted like an excuse, you know, to tell my parents, hey, listen, I got a scholarship or I got a job in China and that's why I'm moving. And I couldn't get anything solid so I can move. And then one day I woke up like, you know what? I'm going.
Wow.
I'm doing
so
it.
How did your family actually react when you broke the news to them? What happened? What just happened?
Not just my family, all my friends, whether they're in Jordan or China or Saudi or Lebanon or whatever. Everyone I told I was moving to China, they're like, oh, why?
That's like...
Even my own parents, they were like, are you crazy? I mean, seriously, even my friends, my parents, my mom, why are you doing that? I'm like, khalas, I need to grow in a different direction. Go to Canada or the States. China is too far. My mom would literally tell me that. And I told them, mom, China's in the same continent. Canada is still further. Like, why would I go to Canada? China is here. It's like literally next door. It's like from Saudi, there's the direct flight, you know? And my dad, at some point, literally, when I got my visa, so I went from Jordan to Saudi because I had a residency in Saudi and I wanted to apply the visa from there and plus see my parents and tell them bye and whatever. And then I got my visa and I was booking my ticket and he was waking up from his nap beside me and he looked up at me and he was like, I'm not convinced with you going to China. But he used Arabic words, of course, and I need to translate them now to English. And he said, but you're stubborn enough like a goat to do whatever you're going to be doing. So I'm just going to tell you good luck.
Wow.
I can't tell you anything else. Literally.
So like you mentioned, normally people, they decide to move to the United States to live the American dream or Canada or UK
China
or somewhere like that.
China is the new American dream.
You pick China.
China
is
the new American dream.
Really?
It's very underrated.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. So what did living in China teach you about yourself?
Oh, so I remember that voice. A lot of people would ask me, what was that big thing? Did you find that big thing? For some people, big thing might mean a big job, a lot of money, maybe buying a house or something materialistic. For me, the big thing was me. I found myself. I had been through a lot of personal turmoil in my personal journey. I'm a divorced woman. I have a kid. My kid was not with me. like there was too much drama going on in my life. And at some point I needed to break free from everything. Maybe I needed to break free from a cultural norm so that I feel that I am 100% me, rather than just stay, like, have a normal job or whatever it is. And yeah, I found out that I am way stronger than I ever thought I was, physically, mentally, emotionally, and everything. I'm way more resilient. At some point, I had $5 in my pocket while I was living in China. No prospect income, no prospect projects. If I ate noodles tonight, I will not be able to make it to the office tomorrow because I was running my own business.
Wow.
Literally, if I had dinner tonight, I wouldn't be able to go and take the bus to work tomorrow. And how did projects come? How did money come? God was there, you know? And I didn't even have, my ego was like, you know, I came to China on my own. I'm going to make it on my own. I couldn't call my parents and tell them, hey, can you support? You know, because if I tell my dad that, he'll be like, pack your bags and come back. I didn't want that because I still felt like I needed to do something. And to be honest with you, it's the best decision of my life, moving there.
So for our audience, I think this is a big takeaway. You know, she just got a call one day in her head that she should go to China.
A calling, maybe.
And she just took a one-way ticket. And the family was shocked, of course. But obviously, they supported her, which is very nice of the family. And because they know you're...
They know I'm stubborn. I'm going to do it anyway.
I don't want to use that word, but... They know that you are, like, in when Lebanese, you decide something, you would do it. And there was no way for them to stop you, but they blessed you and they supported you. And and you said that for you, like, what was that big thing? You said that it was not anything materialistic, but you discovered yourself there. Yeah. You found yourself there, right?
Yep, 100%.
So, and adding to that, what I would want to understand, look, every country has a unique and a different culture. Right. So I think you said that you connected a lot with the culture there.
Yeah,
right?
Of course.
So what did actually, what is the biggest cultural lesson you learned from the Chinese people? What did they really teach you or what did you learn from them?
Oh, their resilience. They're very resilient people as well. The things that they have been through that we don't know of. They had a lot of troubles. They had a lot of poverty. They had a lot of problems. And at the same time, as far as we are geographically from each other, like let's say as Arabs and Chinese, as much as we are super similar, you know, like the fighting over the check, the generosity, the hospitality, at least in my city where I was living in Hangzhou, it's like, oh no, you're my guest. I'm inviting you. You're in my city. You're my guest. It's like, I felt like, okay, this is like Lebanon or any Arab country, you know, like we're fighting over the check. No, I'm paying. It was beautiful. There were so many incidents where I would meet a Chinese and the next day they're inviting me to their house for lunch or dinner. And to meet their family, to meet their parents who are like 75 and they don't speak a word of English so I can practice my Chinese with them. And it was so amazing. Plus, I was getting introduced to all the different food items and dishes. Obviously, I'm a foodie. I work in the industry.
Of course.
And this is very important. And I really realized as well, I knew that, but it emphasized that experience, emphasized my thought that food connects everyone.
It does.
You can learn about the culture of every country and every nation from the food. From the way they have dinner, from the time they have dinner, from what they have on food, from the way they share the food. They share their food just like us, like Lebanese, like the meza. You know, we have the meza and we share everything on the table. It's exactly like that. This is how they eat. And then they have the main course on a big plate and the host would scoop in for your plate and whatever, just like in a Lebanese family. Right. So it was so amazing to find so many similarities regardless of the differences. And I even wrote an article on LinkedIn. I'll be sending it to you.
Of course, comparing
shish barak with dumplings. You know shish barak, the Lebanese dish?
Yeah.
It's dumplings. Dumplings. We just cook it with
like
yogurt.
It's like a steamed dish, yeah.
We just cook it with yogurt. So it's exactly the same. And there are different variations of dumplings in every country. Mm. In Saudi, there's a variation. In Armenia, there is. In Korea, there is. In Japan, there is. Yeah. There's so much similarities. Regardless of how different we are, and we speak different languages, different cultures, different religions, everything.
Oh, amazing. Food actually connects people and connects souls, and food is like really the thing. But now that we spoke about everything you said, what I realize a lot is, like there are a lot of Chinese people here, and I've briefly been to China, but I feel that people have a preconceived notion or a mindset, oh, China is like this, Chinese people are like this.
Mm.
So let's try to bust the myth. or, you know, like try to tell our audience, I think what you feel is the biggest misconception people have about China, about like what's going on in their head. And
that they eat cockroaches.
Do they?
They don't. I mean, I didn't see it, at least. Okay. I did see weird things on menus, yes, or being served to me. Mm. But every time I tell a person I was living in China, did you eat cats and dogs?
What? Okay.
Like,
I know they eat that.
No, I mean, they don't eat that. Mm. This is the thing. They don't eat that. Even, right. Okay, there might be a town or a specific area where they do eat dog meat, but it's not a common practice. It's right. not like us eating beef here, for instance. But every country has its own weird food habits. We eat kibinaye, we eat raw meat.
I tried that.
And raw liver.
I tried that in...
I mean, a poor sheep coming to an Arab house on Eid al-Adha, literally, the poor sheep, we butcher the sheep, nothing is left. We eat everything in the sheep. From the brain to the testicles, literally. The intestines, the bone, we do a bone marrow soup. We eat the liver raw, in Lebanon at least. And even in Saudi, for example, they eat dab, which is like the lizard of the desert. Every country has its own weird food habits. That doesn't mean this is good or this is bad.
Correct.
But every country had their own journey throughout history and why they eat this kind of stuff. For example, in China, they eat all their vegetables steamed.
Yeah, I've seen that.
And I took some Chinese people with me to a Lebanese restaurant. They sent the fattoush to be microwaved.
Wow, really?
Simply because back in the days, the water for irrigating plants was not clean water. It was not safe to be eaten raw.
Right, right.
So they had to steam everything, even the cucumbers and the lettuce.
Right.
So it's not common for them to eat fresh vegetables.
Got your point.
Mm.
Yeah, so food is really something that connects you to people and places. But, you know, China is known to be one of the most advanced countries as far as technology is concerned. Yeah.
Especially Hangzhou.
Oh, really? Hangzhou.
Hangzhou as a city was the most advanced city in all of China when I was living there.
So what is it that you experienced in your travel or your time that you spent there? What kind of technology you saw? Or how do you compare it to the rest of the world?
I moved to China 2017 and I left 2020 because of COVID. I mean, I didn't leave, I got stuck out. I swear to you that 2017, 18, 19, China was more advanced than all over the world, including Dubai today at that point. You're talking about, we never had to carry cash. Yes, everyone's going to tell me, but we have Apple Pay. No. There we use WeChat Pay. We use Alipay. Beggar on the street, the beggar on the street, if you tell him Meiyo Qian means no cash, they will take out a QR code for Alipay and WeChat Pay and be like, you can pay me with your phone.
Mm.
Even the, what's it called, the street vendors, if you're buying something from a street vendor, you just pay them on a QR code. You just scan the QR code. Doesn't have to have a POS system. Doesn't have to have any kind of QR code menu and whatever, like the ones that we have technologies here. Here we have everything. Yes, they're being implemented, especially because I work in F&B.
Yes,
I know they're being implemented. But there, you're talking about me and you. Mm. I can send your WeChat money, and you can send my WeChat money directly.
Yeah.
I don't even have to have any kind of system going on in between, just on the conversation. This is an example. Alibaba is based in Hangzhou. Jack Ma is from Hangzhou, where I was living. So every kind of technology that they wanted to send out, they were testing it on us.
Wow.
Including the QR code on your phone to go on a metro. You don't buy a card for the metro or the bus or the water bus or whatever. There's a QR code connected to your Alipay, and you go. Alipay is part of Alibaba Group, and you just scan the QR code and you go in, and it deducts from your account.
Wow, that's amazing.
China
is one of the most advanced countries as far as the technology is concerned.
Infrastructure, technology, everything. Yeah.
And it's great to know that back in 2017, 18, 19, also the adoption of QR code was so high, and you did not need like advanced point of sale systems, which we usually see from Microfidelio or all these vendors in most of the restaurants and the rest of the world we live in.
Yeah.
Right.
And there were robot butlers in one of the
robot
hotels.
Butlers, they started that trend. And
it was already there.
I
saw it with my own eyes, robot butlers. I saw there was a lot. Everything was technologically advanced. Actually, there was a supermarket called Khema.
Mm-hmm.
They were the first ones to have grocery delivered back in 2018-19 in 15 minutes.
Wow.
One time I went to that store. This is something that I really forget to mention so many times. I was getting some stuff, and it's a small supermarket. It's not like a big Carrefour or something. It's a small store. And I was hearing this buzzing noise, like bzzz. I couldn't tell. Like, I was looking everywhere. I'm short, you know. I was looking everywhere, like, around the shelves. Is there something on the floor? Like, robotic sounds. I look up at the ceiling, and guess what?
Robots.
A rail.
Okay.
And baskets are attached to it. When the order comes on the app, the basket goes to different stations and it goes down, and the guy just needs to put, if the order has bananas,
it's like a conveyor belt.
The guy will just put the banana in the basket, and then it will go to the next station. Apples, the guy will put apples in the next, in the bag. And then another station, meat, the guy from the meat station will put the meat. That's it. I swear. And then it goes all the way back to the cash, and then the delivery guy will take it out. This is how advanced. This is back 7 years ago.
Right. So automation and also utilizing advanced technology in day-to-day applications is something very common in China, and that's kind of very unique that you see over there, right?
Mm.
So from China to Dubai, how was that? How did that experience shape your career? I know that you're a marketer, you've been a TV presenter.
And I did my own show about my life in China. Yes.
Oh, you had your own show about your life in China. Wow.
Yeah.
And you're a concept creator. You wear multiple hats, and these are different roles you play in your day-to-day life. So how did living in China influence the way you approach your work? Did it have any impact on your work, or did it change anything in the way you work today?
Definitely with my character, with my personality, knowing that I am stronger than I ever thought, or I can do whatever I want to do. I always had, maybe I thought I was strong and I thought I can do everything, but I always had some limiting beliefs. And when I moved to China, and I'm like, you know what? If I can live in China, I can live anywhere else in the world.
Right.
If I can live in China, I can do anything, literally. And to be honest with you, a few years back, if you tell me move to Dubai, I wouldn't have moved to Dubai. But before China, at least. Actually, I did get a job offer to move to Dubai in 2016 with my ex-company, with my ex-employer, whom I love. But I was like, nope, I'm going to China. And I did get a job offer from another company. I was like, nope, I'm going to China. I was being headhunted out of Jordan. I'm like, no, guys, I'm moving to China. And at that time, I was not interested in moving to another Arab country. And after I moved to China, I escaped to Lebanon during COVID. That was a whole different experience. Like, because literally I had no plans to leave China. I left everything at home,
my
clothes, my degrees, everything. But then when things happened and the whole world stopped, eventually I was headhunted again to Dubai and I came here. I didn't enjoy my experience with that job. And I was like, you know what? I'm not enjoying this experience. I'm quitting. Mm. And it was like, okay, so what's next for Thereya? And it was literally during COVID, it was like 5 people per table. You still have to wear a mask. You still have to do a PCR test if you're traveling anywhere. So it was still limited. It's not like the Dubai we know today. I was like, you know what? I'm going to start my own company all over again from scratch. I had to borrow money from my dad to be able to start the company because I came to Dubai with no money on my name. I went to China with a little bit of money. I came to Dubai with zero money, literally. And at that point, if I didn't have that experience starting from scratch in China, I wouldn't have been able to do it again from Dubai, to be honest with you. I wouldn't have had the courage. And my mom called me a few days after I quit that job. And she was like, hey, how's it going? I do remember like last week you told me you were not that happy with that job. What happened with you and whatever? I was like, yeah, mom, I quit. Khalas, like I'm done. I was like, okay, yeah, no problem. Good luck and whatever. What are you doing next? Blah, 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 blah. And that evening, my dad called me and he was like, hey, I just came back from work and your mom was telling me that you quit your job. Why? Did anyone annoy you? What happened and whatever? I was like, Khalas, I didn't find myself. I don't fit into that company. And he was like, what are you doing next? I'm like, yeah, I'm going to figure it out. Maybe start my own business and whatever. He said one sentence that is still sticking in my head till today. And again, he said it in Arabic, but I'm going to translate it in English. He said, you're strong enough and I won't be scared for you. Whatever,
wow.
Wherever you land, whatever you're thrown, whatever like the life throws you at, you're going to land on your feet.
Whatever life throws at you, you're going to land at your feet. It's an amazing sentence said by Thuraya's father in Arabic. And she landed in Dubai, and that's your next chapter, Dubai. So let's dig a little bit into your Dubai chapter. But before that, let's try to understand from your perspective. Let's try to compare Dubai versus China, the lifestyle comparison, because you just came from
Hangzhou.
China and you...
Hangzhou. China is a huge country, to be honest.
Correct. Because Dubai is a city and UAE we are in. So let's say not China, UAE, but Hangzhou versus Dubai. When you came here, mainly from a lifestyle perspective, what did you notice here and what changed and how you want to describe
the prices? I mean, okay, we all know that in China, I mean, at least in Hangzhou back in the day, everything was way cheaper than here, but we still had a quality life kind of.
Mm.
But at the same time, it's not like the same experiences that you have here. For example, in Dubai, I wouldn't say I can live without a car. I have to drive. Ever since I came here, I had a car. In China, you don't need a car. You'd be stupid to get a car, to be honest with you, unless it's your job that requires to go to different cities throughout the day and whatever, and that's when you actually need to have a car full time. The transportation is convenient. It's affordable. It's connected. Everything is manageable. You can walk for hours. It's a walking friendly city.
Right.
Of course, the weather is different. The weather is totally different in here. You're talking about extremely cold and snowy and rainy in winter and extremely hot and rainy in summer. But fall and spring are gorgeous. It's like heaven on earth, literally. Even in winter when it snows, it's heaven on earth. It's beautiful. There's so much culture. There's so much greenery. There's so much lakes, rivers. Actually, Hangzhou is famous for having the most mystical, lake where all the love stories and the Chinese myth and history have happened there. Wow. You know, the snake and the princess and the Pagoda Tower and the broken bridge and all of these places. It's beyond gorgeous. Like, you would be in downtown at the lake, and there's a huge fountain show, with all due respect to the Dubai fountain. That fountain is in a lake, in a normal, natural lake.
Oh.
And the green tea plantations are behind you, like behind that lake, the fountain. Like literally, green tea plantations, you can go there and you can actually pick the tea with the farmers and roast your own tea. And the most expensive kinds of tea come from Hangzhou.
Of course, Chinese tea is very popular and very famous.
In specific, that tea that comes from Hangzhou, in 2015, there was 1 kilogram sold for $15,000.
Wow, that's
1 kilogram.
$15,000?
It's called the royal
tea. 1 kilo of tea, the royal tea.
Longjing cha is called the royal tea.
Cha.
Because Hangzhou, at some point, 3,000 years ago, was the capital of the empire of China. Okay. And Marco Polo, during his travels, he said, Hangzhou is the most splendid city my eyes have ever seen.
Wow.
This is how gorgeous. And they still preserve that heritage and culture with the technology. It's a 10 million people city. Mm. But at the same time, you feel like, oh, I feel like I'm in a very cozy place, like a village. But it's like advanced, like that mixed feeling, you know, it's like, oh, I love it. I love this mixed feeling. You know, the people are so nice. They're so friendly. They don't see too many foreigners. So like they were taking pictures with me all the time. With my big hair, you know, and like everything. And like, oh, I felt like Kim Kardashian first week I was there. Everyone taking selfies with me. It was very interesting. Now, Dubai, on another hand, of course, being an Arab country, closer to Saudi, so I can go visit my family anytime, closer to Jordan, closer to Lebanon, so I can hop on a flight and travel whenever I want. Unlike when I was in China, if anything happens, it's expensive, it's lengthy process. When COVID happened, it was like a whole dilemma of me leaving China, and I managed to literally escape on before the last flight leaving, Etihad flight leaving China. But still, in Dubai, you still have the food, which is way easier to find Arabic food, at least.
Yeah.
There, Chinese food was excellent in Hangzhou, but I did miss our cuisine.
Of course.
I did miss our Lebanese stuff. You know, if I wanted to order labneh and olives and olive oil, I had to order it online from Guangzhou because there's too many Arabs living there. Mm. So they had these products. I had to order them on Taobao. I couldn't just go to a supermarket. If I had to go to a supermarket to buy a lemon, which is a main ingredient in Lebanese cuisine, if I want to make something Lebanese, a lemon is for $1.
Wow.
It's sold separately in a bag. They don't use it in their cuisine. For them, it's like a luxury thing. And one time I was buying like a kilogram of lemon, like we do as Lebanese. We buy like those big bags because we have like a lot of lemon in our food. And everyone was looking at me in the supermarket like,
what are you buying?
What are you buying? So yeah, I had different experiences. But at the same time, living in Dubai, I can't complain. Both cities have been very safe for women, very safe to walk around any time of the day. I could cycle back home at 3 a.m. in the morning. I could walk at 12 a.m. looking for a pharmacy to get a medicine. Everything was delivered. Everything was convenient back in Hangzhou, just like now in Dubai. But at the same time, the language barrier sometimes plays a role. Even though I speak some Chinese, but my dialect is not that clear for everyone. I can't understand everyone's dialect. But the moment that a Chinese delivery driver would be like screaming on the phone, trying to find my location, and then I would like send them the message, like, okay, because I can write and you can read what I write. And then they come to my door and they see that I'm a foreigner, like Lao Wai in Chinese, and speaking Chinese to him, I'm like, oh, wow. They'd be, oh my God, I like you because you speak some Chinese. So they did love that. They did appreciate that I spoke some Chinese and I knew how to eat with chopsticks, which is weird because I know how to eat with chopsticks since I was a kid. But they do love it when a foreigner is trying to understand their culture and their language. Dubai, on another hand, too many Lebanese are here, so I didn't stand out. but at the same time, at least, like, literally, it's Arab country at the end of the day. I've been going around inside UAE as well. I've been going to Fujairah, to Umm Al Quwain, to Ras Al Khaim. I go hiking. I do some different activities, off-roading with my friends. It's a different experience. It's totally different than China. Yeah.
So yeah, guys, a lot of takeaways from what you just mentioned. Like living in Dubai, you definitely need a car. And in China, of course, you definitely don't need a car.
No, you don't need a car.
By the way, I have been living here 23 years and I don't drive. I don't have a car. And
oh my God.
It's amazing, right?
Oh,
it's surprising.
God.
So you found somebody strange. But what you mentioned about is the lush gardens and the tea over there and those kind of things. The nature, of course, now UAE has good nature in Ras Al Khaimah or Umm Al Quwain and these places. But in Dubai, we miss that because Dubai is all kind of
handmade. Yeah, everything is man-made. The beach is man-made.
You mentioned that, the cuisine part, Chinese cuisine is great and you really enjoyed that to whatever extent. But you're missing your cuisine. Yeah? And this is closer to home and you can
and
easily go
especially in Hangzhou. Hangzhou was, we didn't have too many expats like in Shanghai, for example.
Yeah.
Shanghai, you were talking at that point when I was there. There were 1 million expat residents with a working visa. That we have different categories of visas in China.
Right.
With a Z visa, which is an employee visa, we had 1 million registered with a Z visa at that point. That's aside from the families and the kids and the student visa students and a freelance visa or the owner visa or whatever, investor visa. So imagine how many foreigners. You walk in Shanghai, you see a lot of foreigners and so many Chinese speak English.
Mm.
But in Hangzhou, it's not that common. So sometimes when I'm like, I need a little bit of an international exposure kind of feeling, I take the train next door to Shanghai because it's literally 1 hour away.
Right.
I go spend the day in Shanghai or the weekend and I come back to Hangzhou. And then I'm like, okay, I'm back to China.
And she was always followed by the Chinese paparazzi being the Kim Kardashian, the Lebanese Kim Kardashian or the Shakira of that part of the world. Right, let's talk a little bit about, since you are from the creative field, you build concepts for restaurants and all that. So Dubai is constantly reinventing itself, right, all the time. We see that Dubai, too many good concepts are coming here. So would you say it's the perfect place for new concepts from your point of view, Dubai?
Yes and no.
All right. Please explain.
Yes and no. When you're talking about the F&B industry, it's too competitive. It's becoming too repetitive, copy-paste. Unfortunately, there are some places that you feel like, okay, there's diluted concepts. The diluted identity, at least. Like, again, I am very picky when it comes to this because it's been my field for a while.
Yeah.
I've been doing this kind of work for 12 years out of 20 years of work. So more than half of my career has been in F&B. And I am a foodie myself. And I like to appreciate food with the whole experience. It's not just the food itself.
Right.
So if I'm going to a Chinese restaurant, I want to enjoy my Chinese food with a Chinese ambiance, with a Chinese sense, with the Chinese music in the background, not with rock music, for example. It's all elements that come together to build the experience.
Right.
I'm not saying that I had this experience in Dubai,
no, per se.
But there are some places that have diluted concepts. It's a little bit more bling-bling style rather than the actual core of F&B concepts. There's a lot of places, if you scratch down the service, is not what it's saying.
Right.
There's not much value for money for the experience overall. In some places, again, there are some places that are excellent and impeccable and they deserve a Michelin star and they deserve to be on 50 Best and they deserve to be mentioned on every PR and magazine and newspaper and whatever it is. But considering there are too many players in the market, the percentage of restaurants that do have a solid identity is small. Whereas in China, yes, there are restaurants who cannot be operating as restaurants from my perspective. Like, okay, the food is crap or this is not food, for example. But at the same time, you would see a small restaurant that has a solid identity more than anything else or a small concept. In Jeddah, in Saudi, there are places who have been operating for like 40 years.
Yeah.
Without any major bling style of whatever you want to call it, promotion
right.
or something.
So what I understood from what you're saying that the concepts here are diluted or sort of like mixed concepts.
There's too many.
There's too many. The market is saturated and a lot of people are doing copy paste. So kind of it kind of throws you off because you are a foodie and you love these concepts. So I'm going to ask you a very controversial question, or I don't know if it's a controversial question, but it's a question which has been on my mind. But I think a lot of people listening to us or watching us on wherever we are streaming today have this question at the back of mind. Should people actually move to Dubai? What's your take on that?
Also, yes and no. It depends on your character. It depends on your objective in life. It depends on your age.
Mm-hmm.
It depends on your budget. It depends on, are you coming to look for a job as a junior? Are you coming to look for a job as a senior? Are you coming to open a new business? Mm-hmm. Is your business competitive enough to succeed in a red ocean? If you're opening a restaurant, are you doing some unique, very killer idea, and you know that the moment you open, people are going to love you and love your concept? Or are you coming to retire? So it all depends on all of these elements. And to be honest with you, it's not easy to just move to Dubai and look for a job anymore. Not like 20 years ago.
Yeah.
20, 25 years ago, anyone who would land in Dubai, they'll get the job tomorrow from any nationality.
Mm.
I will say about Lebanese at least, because you know I know from my people, yeah, from my cousins, from my friends and whatever. You can come to Dubai and have a very nice life and a very nice salary. 20 years ago, fresh graduate, straight out of university, coming to Dubai, landing a very good job in media and advertising and whatever it is. Now, it's not the same.
Right.
It's too competitive as well.
I think I can relate to what you're saying, because things have evolved. There's too much competition. There's lots of people.
And it's a lot more expensive. And the salaries are still low.
Salaries are low. The cost of living has gone up.
Mm.
The bar has raised. Okay, you can live a life here on a budget if you want to, but then you will not have the best of your life, right? And the thing you mentioned, that it depends, like why you're moving here, what's your purpose to move here, and whether you should really make that move, because maybe you're already comfortable and you will disrupt your life by making the move, right? So it's not for everybody, although social media might tell you otherwise, because people look at social media and feel that, oh, Dubai is
the bling bling lifestyle,
the Ferraris, the Lamborghinis, the influencers.
And then they come here and they're like, okay, I need to take a bus.
Correct, the metro, the bus. Okay.
No, but to be honest, I think if you do have a budget to be able to sustain a good life for, like, let's say a year, like savings, mm-hmm, to actually figure out what you want and like rent a decent apartment, rent a car, move around, get to network and meet people. Networking is very important in Dubai. And finding your right circle, at the end of the day, if you don't even make your own social circle, you will not enjoy living here. Even if you're making thousands of dollars.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, you need people who look like you and who act like you, who like things like you do. So that, because we need the social element in our lives. You cannot live on our own. And it's not as easy as in our countries, let's say in Lebanon or in Jordan or even in Saudi, at least because I grew up there. So I grew up with a big community already. I lived in a school with thousands of people who are like me, expats living in Saudi, Arab people living in Saudi. So we did grow up in the same culture, in the same background, even though we come from different backgrounds originally. But the Jordanian, the Syrian, the Palestinian, the Afghani, the Indian, the Egyptian, the American, whatever it is, we all grew up studying the same things, learning the same things, experiencing the same things. And then suddenly everyone in Dubai is coming from all these different pools of cultures and everything. And I might not be interested in your interests, for example. You might not be interested in my interest. So this is challenging. At the same time, when it comes to the cost, if you're able to manage your cost while you actually penetrate the market and figure out what you want to do. Because so many people are living, again, back to the objective and why they're coming to Dubai. If they're escaping a war, is one thing. If they're just leaving for the escaping taxes in their countries, it's another thing. If they're leaving because literally their situation is miserable in the country, or like they're living on the street, and then living in a partition here for Dubai, for them, and Dubai is okay, is better than living on the street in their country, then maybe it's different.
Right.
But for me, for example, if I own a house in Jordan, I own a house, not me, my family owns, owns houses. If something happens, I just pack and go. It's not like it's not like I have to be here, because otherwise I will be on the street.
Got you. So my takeaway from you would be that Dubai is not for everyone. So it depends on your situation, because from person to person and what you're doing
your
country, whether you're from
competitive advantage
and like whether you're from Jordan or Lebanon or Saudi Arabia or India or Egypt, because maybe your situation in your country is different. And maybe there's reasons for you to move, then you should move, but maybe not. So just don't blindly look at social media and make those decisions. Be a bit mindful, talk to real people. That's why we have this kind of podcast, to talk to real people and share real, you know, real life experiences, rather than, because today we are in the world of AI.
No fake promises.
Can go to chat
no
GPT
fake promises,
and get,
yeah.
Yeah. So it's real opinions of real people who have lived here, spent time here. So, right, let's move to the next section of questions. Now, this is kind of like everyone, all of us have some travel hacks, or this is for audience to understand what kind of travel hacks or tricks you use. So my first question is that, what's a travel hack most people don't know about? Like, you know, there must be some travel hack you know that people don't know. Would you like to share something?
I wouldn't really call it a hack per se. Okay. I'm not like this kind of person who is like gonna give you all like those travel bloggers. There are people who are experts in this and they know exactly when to buy a ticket and when not to buy a ticket. But I would say for flights, definitely minimize your layovers. Mm-hmm. I would rather recommend that, because the more layovers, the more money you're going to be spending, and the more time you're going to be spending, and you get tired and grumpy, and you might lose your luggage and whatever. Losing luggage means cost, you know?
Yeah.
But I would say try to book in advance. The more you book in advance, at least you will find better deals. And for hotels, for example, or accommodation, I would always try to find something, of course, towards the area where I want to explore, rather than far and spend my money on taxis or transportation and my time in taxis and transportation. And at the same time, I'd rather go live in a local experience rather than in a luxury hotel, as I mentioned. So the only time I think I booked in a luxury expensive hotel, let's say, was one time I went to Riyadh, and I had to, I had a conference. I was moderating a panel at the conference, and I stayed in the same hotel.
Yeah, because
like,
of
so it was more convenient, because literally
yeah,
like, Riyadh is huge
and
the traffic.
Or do something and
with it, because I looked for something else, and then I looked into the how much Uber would cost me, and it would have been the same with wasted time on the road. You know, I didn't want to be late to the conference and whatever. It was literally like I came down to the conference, but otherwise this is because literally it was a work thing. Otherwise, when I'm doing anything like for example in Italy. When I went to Napoli, it was literally a guest house kind of thing, like a bed and breakfast.
Yeah.
It's like a four-floor building, no elevator. I had to carry my luggage upstairs. But like, for example, the owner of that guest house, because it was a very random, spontaneous trip,
right.
I was texting him and I was like, where's the best authentic pizza, like Napolitan experience that you would go to? He sent me somewhere 5 minutes walking, literally 5 minutes walking, the best pizza I had in my life. And then he gave me the number of his friend, who apparently is a friend of my friend from Dubai, who's also from Napoli. That's why I trusted that guy. And she was like, yeah, he's my friend from 20 years. Go out with him. He showed me around like a local in Napoli.
That's amazing.
And then the next day, that owner of the guest house took me with his girlfriend and his other friend to a secret beach with a boat and whatever. Yeah. You know, it's like, it's amazing. It was, I don't know anything touristic in Napoli. I know local experiences now in Napoli, you know.
So really, I think from whatever you're saying, the takeaway is try to book flights early. Don't try to book layovers, because you can probably miss flights or, you know, it can be more expensive and you can lose your baggage, and that's going to add up more to your cost. So those are really valid and good tips and tricks that you shared as hacks. And I really believe in that. And of course, the most important one I would say is that instead of going to the touristy places that everybody does,
make friends with the locals.
Make friends with the locals and let locals show you around places that they go to, because that is going to give you a very different experience rather than what you would normally
come
across.
And you'll have the best food.
I'll have the best food. Absolutely, absolutely. So can you tell me, I know we spoke a little bit about one of your most memorable travel stories. Was it your South African trip or something else?
Oh my God, South Africa was amazing, definitely. I actually went to watch the final game of the World Cup in 2010.
Wow, in 2010, huh?
Final
awesome.
Game, with the vuvuzelas and everything. It was like my first winter experience coming from Saudi. So I literally had to borrow clothes for my friend, because I lived in Saudi all my life, from summer to summer. Summer in Saudi throughout the year, and then I go to Lebanon to summer. I never had like jackets and boots and anything. And I was going only for 4 days, so it was not worth like buying a whole wardrobe of winter clothes. It was an amazing experience. But I would say the most recent one was the Napoli experience that I just mentioned. I think it's the best thing that I ever did. Even though in South Africa, I did make friends. Like, we did meet the locals and dance with them and eat like them and whatever. But it was not that much, because we were a group going with a company. But in Napoli, because I was solo, it was like, it's my time. Right. I was going. Even when I traveled to Istanbul, I just walked around and I took details of places from the receptionist at the boutique hotel I was staying at. I went downstairs to her and I was like, write down places you would go to with your family on your day off.
Wow.
And she was like, yeah, tourists would like, no. I don't want anywhere tourists would go to. I want where Turkish people would go to. She wrote down some places and I just started walking around, maps.
Awesome. Alone. So instead of following Google or any of these travel recommendation websites, talk to the local people and they will give you some real hidden gems, some real
exactly.
secrets, like where they go to. And that can change your complete experience. And Thura actually went to watch the World Cup in South Africa in 2010. And she had won that ticket, if I'm not wrong, right?
Yeah.
You won it. Yeah, that's
with
amazing.
Kia, yeah.
Winner, chicken dinner. Okay.
Fully paid trip. I don't mind any fully paid trips, baby.
Awesome. All right, so I understand that you run a successful company here, which is into curating restaurant concepts.
Restaurateurs. I would say it's a small company, not yet successful. Inshallah, successful. Inshallah.
Our good wishes are with you.
Thank you.
So what I want to ask you is, I did some research and I found out that 80% of the restaurants actually close down in like less than a year or two.
If not more. The turnover is very high.
Why does that happen? What's the reason for that?
I did mention this on another podcast about restaurants, but it was an Arabic podcast.
Mm-hmm.
to be honest with you, one of the major problems is the consistency, the greed. The owners open because they, whoever wants to open a restaurant, I want to open a restaurant, it's a successful business. And then they get into the actual operations and it's muddy. And they're like, oh no, this is not for me. This is number one. Number two, the consistency. They play around with the ingredients. They play around with the recipes. And then if I go one time, second time, third time, and I don't find the right experience, or at least what I'm expecting, I would never get back there. Plus, a very, very, very big problem in Dubai. UAE, many places, not just in Dubai.
Yeah.
Because I'm a marketeer, and this is like a pain point that I have, and I'm discussing this on my podcast, Marketing Talks. A restaurant opens... opening, launch, PR, influencers, which I don't like to use that term, and a lot of marketing being done for the opening, and then that's it.
Yeah, and then they fizzle off, yeah.
Silence. But marketing is the fuel for your business.
Absolutely.
You can have a Ferrari, but if you're not filling it with fuel, it's a piece of junk parked in your car, in your house, literally. You have to fill it up with the fuel every week, every 2 weeks, whatever, no matter how much you're using it. You need to fill it up with the right quantity and the right quality of fuel. That's the same thing for marketing for your restaurant. This is a pitfall people fall into. Plus, when you're talking about the cost and they don't manage the operations properly so that they cannot control their cost, they end up losing their money.
Right. So, guys, I don't know if you know, but 80% of the restaurants actually shut down in their first or second year of operation in Dubai, especially. Dubai is a very saturated market. And like Thuraya mentioned, marketing is very important. Restaurateurs forget that when they launch, they do some marketing, they call influencers and all, but they need to continue marketing the place, up their social media game and spread awareness and
work on their products, work on their pricing, the menus, the ambiance, the activations, the events, everything.
Okay. I'm going to ask you like a question related to food since you're a foodie. So I want to ask you, which is the most weirdest or the worst food you ever tried? Or you can say about a cuisine or a dish or a place or whatever you feel
durian.
Like. Durian. Durian, okay.
By accident, I wanted to get a sandwich from 7-Eleven in China and I thought it's cheddar cheese because it looked yellow. And I was super tired. It was like midnight after work. Like I had a very long day and whatever. And I just picked the sandwich, paid for it, and I went out and I took a bite and it was horrible. Even stinky tofu. Ugh. They made me try it. It's okay, like
let's leave the worst food apart. Let's talk about this. And I really want to talk to you about this from my point of view. And I feel and I truly believe, is Lebanese food really the best food in the world?
Yes.
You even answered before I completed my question.
Yes.
Wow. Great.
Yes.
So now we're going to enter a section which is like a rapid fire section. So you have to be quick. It's just yes or not. Nice yes or no. You just have to pick one. Okay. So window seat or aisle seat?
Window.
Okay, luxury hotel or boutique stay?
Boutique, for sure.
Okay, adventure trip or relaxing getaway?
Adventure. Sometimes relaxing, but adventures are more...
Sunrise flight or red-eye overnight flights?
Sunrise.
Planned itinerary or spontaneous trips?
Spontaneous.
Mountains or beaches?
Both.
Okay.
That's why I love Lebanon. You can be on the mountain and seeing the beach. You can be at the beach seeing the mountain.
I've experienced that. Big city or off-the-grip escape plans?
Definitely not big city.
Okay. Would you rather be stuck at an airport for 24 hours or lose your baggage for 1 week?
maybe lose my baggage, I can buy other stuff.
Cool.
Yeah, and explore instead of being stuck at the airport.
Only visit tropical beaches or snowy mountains for the rest of your life?
Both.
Both?
A mix
okay.
of both, yeah.
Okay. Travel for free but never get to choose the destination, or pay for your flights but always get to choose your destination.
For free. I don't mind where I go as long as I'm traveling.
Visit only places you've been to or never visit places you've been to?
Oh, that's a very tough one. No.
It's a paradox.
Neither.
Okay. So this one is the one and only where one destination everyone should visit before they die.
If they've never been to Akkar in Lebanon, my home province.
Great.
Definitely.
One travel experience that changed your life?
China.
I think I know the answer, China, right? Mm. The one country that still surprises you every time you go there?
Lebanon.
Wow, that's amazing.
Mm. Yeah, my home, but I never lived there, so every time there's something different.
The one thing you always buy as a souvenir?
Food-related stuff.
Great. Mm. The one thing you always forget to pack?
Hmm. Nothing.
Well, Saptraya, you were absolutely amazing. You crushed this mission today.
Thank you.
And I want to ask you, for our listeners, where can the listeners follow your journey?
My Instagram, Taraya Talib, and obviously my LinkedIn, and hopefully my podcast, my Marketing Talks podcast on YouTube, but mainly on my Instagram. Yeah, I'm very active.
Right. That's great. So we're going to plug all her social media handles so that our audience can follow you and
thank you.
Also watch your podcast when the podcast releases.
Thank you.
So guys, that's a wrap on the License to Explore show. If you enjoyed today's episode, please make sure to subscribe, hit the like button and follow us on all social media handles. And thank you, Taraya, for joining us. You've been amazing. It
thank
has been
you.
Lovely talking to you.
Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. It's a pleasure.
Thank
I'm sure
so
we'll
much.
Probably get into another episode to unfold more portions of your life.
Inshallah.
So until the next time, stay curious. And remember, we are at License to Explore. See you in the next one.
Thank you. See you.
Lebanon for 3 months. You know, like every year, we're just waiting for the summer to travel and have the traveling in my 20s, let's say.
This is your host, Rohit. And today in the studio, I have an amazing personality who has traveled to more than 73 countries. And not just Earth, but his vision is so deep. He's actually now exploring how you can actually travel to space. And he's the founder of Wanda Group. Let's welcome to the show, Francisco Agosto.
Taking people to space is going to be a reality. By the end of 2025, we are going to be taking people to space from the UAE. Imagine this balloon full inflated and covering up a whole football stadium.
Wow.
Straight up to the stratosphere where people are going to be able to see the curvature of the Earth. The termination line where the day turns into night and the night turns into day.